Pull Up to the Bumper, disco classic there from Grace Jones, who recently turned 75. Feeling old yet? Grace Jones, fantastic funk from before computers ruined music, says someone on the text. Good point. Anyway, that was one of Grace Jones' biggest hits, and it turned out that she got pretty tired of people asking exactly what it was all about, because it was often suggested that it was, well, but suggestive that there was an element of innuendo about it. But she actually tackled this in her autobiography. She said, "It was just a way of having fun with some words that suited a track that sounded like you were having fun. So we have a car. It's long. It's a limousine speeding down Manhattan Avenues. The lights are on green and you want to keep it clean. So you have to wax it and rub it and give it a shine. Look, it's hard to park because we're in the middle of the city, and it's so big, this limousine, you have to squeeze it into tight spaces, nudge it up against the car in front of you or behind you or both. You have to make it fit, and when you do, it's a great feeling." So she went on to say, obviously you could sound like you might be talking about something else. If you wanted, you could imagine that I'm not singing about parking a car at all, but that's up to you. If you think the song is not about parking a car, shame on you. Though, when I did a bit of research on this, local critic James Crute had an interview with Grace Jones for Stuff. I think this was in 2019. He got a rather different answer when he asked about this. Grace Jones said then, "When I perform it, I'm not driving a car. I slap my ass. It's definitely a great double-meaning song. And I used to like to write double meanings until I thought, why don't I just be brave and get right to the point?" So, bit of a different explanation there about what Pull Up to the Bumper is really all about. And the reason we're talking about it at all in the first place is it's the choice of our next guest from Los Angeles. Sister Unity from the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence is with us. Morning, Sister. So do you think Pull Up to the Bumper is just a song about parallel parking big cars in a congested urban Manhattan environment?
Beep, beep, toot, toot, hey, beep, beep. No, I do not. Thank you for asking. That song made electricity run through my veins from my high school days until this very minute in which I, and I believe your producer told me, we were both boogieing in front of our microphones as the song played. It has electrified me. And of course, it is, in my opinion, as a prominent homosexual, it is absolutely tongue-in-cheek. And yes, that was a double entendre. And Grace Jones is extremely clever and is extremely forward-thinking and avant-garde. And she's always lived and thrived and created art in the avant-garde. And I think it is, I think it must absolutely be a double entendre, but I think it'd be spoiled if she said it to everyone, "Yes, yes, it is about fornication. So go ahead and enjoy that." That would ruin the joke and the fun and the sort of nudge, nudge, wink, wink aspect of it, wouldn't it?
Well, aside from that, tech-wise, fantastic funk from before computers ruined music, reckoned one of our listeners. Agree with that?
Well, yes, absolutely. Except I would take issue with the computers ruined music. I know why they say that. And acoustic music, particularly acoustic funk with a healthy horn section, it just can't be beat. Earth, Wind & Fire, Kool & the Gang, for example. However, I have gotten my booty to shake to the likes of Kraftwerk and Afrika Bambaataa. And what Afrika Bambaataa did with Kraftwerk's music, took it back to Brooklyn, started spinning it, and out of which grew rap and hip hop, which went on its own direction, certainly, but had its roots firmed in the computer music of Kraftwerk, with some influences from Jean from Iowa. Who had borrowed actual deceased Catholic nuns' habits from a convent in Iowa City for a production of The Sound of Music. They unfortunately neglected to return them, and they moved to San Francisco with them in their luggage. And one day, the day before Easter in 79, they got a bee in their bonnets and they decided to put on the habits and go about town. And they got such a tremendous response that they realized that they could use this image of a hairy-chested, bearded nun with the iconoclastic, sarcastic, gay sense of humor to use joy and humor and satire for gay rights. And so they did. But very shortly after that, as everyone knows, AIDS began, and it really hit our community extremely hard. And no one in the United States was doing anything. Ronald Reagan wouldn't even say the word AIDS until 1987. And so they started to do some of the first work in supporting the community and the fight against HIV and AIDS. They produced the world's first candlelight vigil in San Francisco to bring attention to AIDS. They produced one of the world's first safe sex pamphlets called Playfair, which covered HIV and AIDS prevention as well as other STIs. And they produced some of the world's first fundraising events for the burgeoning organizations in our community that were trying to help people who were suffering. They had a dog show, like the Westminster Kennel Club show that you might see on TV. They had a dog show in the Castro neighborhood, which, if you don't know, San Francisco is sort of the gayborhood. And has been for since Harvey Milk's days. And Shirley MacLaine came and was on stage with them for that. And then ever since then, that sort of informed our ministry ever since then. And there are now 56 houses in North America and Canada and the United States. And as there have been as many as 11 different countries with houses, including Australia has had the second house in the world after San Francisco, started in Sydney. And then there were houses in Melbourne. I believe there's still one in Perth and at one time in Brisbane.
So there's lots of fundraising that goes on in charitable work. I wonder, when you look at the news cuttings about the sisters, the word irreverent is the most commonly used adjective. I think I used it at the start of the program, but lazy there.
Also, quite a good word.
Yeah, well, colourful is the other one that's used
flamboyant.
A lot.
Flamboyant even.
Well, I was just thinking, you used a couple of more targeted ones in a video I watched with you the other day. You described yourselves as flamboyant and preposterous.
Yes.
Which in a way could be an insult if someone describes it, but preposterous, because, I mean, but does the people making those adjectival references to how you look, how you perform in public, your Catholic garb and all of that, which is obviously eye-catching and you are indeed colourful, no two ways around it, but does that obscure perhaps the serious community work, the fundraising, the charity and so on that you do?
Oh, I'm very sure that it does. Let me just sort of, if you don't mind, let me nudge one of the things you said. You referred to our garb as Catholic garb. And certainly we borrowed from Catholic images and ritual traditions, not meaning to demean at all. Sometimes meaning to critique, sure. And definitely meaning to satire. And if you'd like, I can explain why that happens. But really, it was a starting point for an imagination. It started because they had these habits and the idea of a man with a beard and a habit was a funny joke, a funny image. And so it started from humor. But over the years, it has really morphed. For example, I went to visit my sister, who was in a punk band called The Mutants in the 70s and 80s in San Francisco. I visited her in 1982. And we bumped into the gay pride parade down the street, walking up, I think it was Market. And I was just amazed. And there were... gay Samoan had a contingent, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's all over the world. And then there were gay fathers, which really blew my mind at the time. And then the sisters appeared with Sister Boom Boom in the back of a convertible car, like the politicians always sit in the back of the convertible. And she was waving a enormous, shall we call it a marital aid of the excitement variety in her hand, a big floppy one, and blessing the crowd with it. And that image was definitely sort of out of the Catholic tradition, but she had turned it into something with this white face and this colorful makeup over it. And I was electrified at the idea of taking iconoclasm and satire to push off the damage and the violence that had been done to our community by people who have used religious tenets and who have used the Bible to hit people over the head with. It's not an uncommon behavior. There are people in all walks of life who use official rules of whatever sort. We've even had it in the sisters where someone may join and they're a real everybody listen to me type of person. And they'll take our policies and practices manual, which we do have. We're a nonprofit agency. And they'll hit people over the head with it. Say, you have to do what I say. There are people like that everywhere. The way that we heal from that is we use satire to laugh at it and to...
Not everyone gets the joke, which is obviously a problem, or sees it quite the same way that you do. But recently, you've been in the headlines a lot right across the US, and we've seen some of them here. This is to do with Pride Night for the LA Dodgers baseball team coming up, I think, the 16th of June. So the sisters were due to be part of that, but the controversy is you got uninvited initially by the Dodgers, but now reinvited. So now you will be back in Pride Night on the 16th of June. What happened there?
So the Dodgers, here's the thing that people don't understand. LGBT doesn't mean that you live in a little rainbow apartment in West Hollywood or Provincetown or Sydney, and you never leave, and it's all contained within this one community. As we know from naturally occurring phenomena like homosexuality, bisexuality, transgenderism, it's something that happens at birth, and birth happens to all sorts of people and all sorts of families. So we're really everywhere in all walks of life, including in the administration. And indeed, in the roster of players of major athletic teams in football, in soccer, football, and in baseball, and certainly in the Dodgers administration, there are LGBT people. They're senior vice president, executive vice president for marketing and communications and broadcasting, is a gay man with a husband, and we were nominated. We don't know by who, but someone in the organization nominated us for the Community Hero Award after our 27 years of service to our community. And we, drag queens are used to people ignoring us. We're a little too queer. We're a little too weird to put in the press or to have at the vanguard of your public exposure. We get that. We're used to it. So it was a very big surprise that a national organization would recognize us. But then, a week later, conservative right-wing senator from Florida, Senator Marco Rubio, put out a tweet decrying us, calling us a hate-based trans group. Now, we have transgender members, we have non-binary members, we have cisgendered members. We're open to all romantic affiliations, gender expressions, races, etc. So you have to understand that in America, there's this big push against trans and drag because after the conservatives did very poorly in the 2022 elections, their think tanks went to work finding hot button issues to motivate their base for
But
volunteerism.
wasn't Rubio also, I don't know the circumstances of the tweet, but if you say that triggered it, wasn't part of this because of the publicity given to the Hunky Jesus contest that you had, which we've seen?
No, not at first. Not at
Okay.
first. It was absolutely that they were looking for trans and drag news items and jumping on them. And up we popped with this announcement by the Dodgers of the award, and they jumped on that at first. It was later that they start. It was about a week after the controversy began, after the Dodgers rescinded the award, that you started to see videos of the Hunky Jesus contest, which is really a male beauty contest with Jesus drag, if you will, put on by the San Francisco chapter of the Sisters on their big celebration in Dolores Park on usually on Easter.
But either way, whatever the sequence was, did the Dodgers just feel the controversy was too much and tried to quietly, but unsuccessfully quietly, disinvite you from the Pride Night on the 16th?
That's correct. And the way they did that, the way it all fell out was the CEO, Stan Kasten, he came in the morning after Rubio's tweet and he saw the press and, of course, the Catholic League and the Catholic Vote, who have been jumping up and down on our firm but brightly colored buttocks since day one. And he said, oh no, bad press. And he sought to protect his organization. And he called up our sister, Beyoncé Knowles, and told her that they were feeling too much heat and had to rescind the award. And Beyoncé let him know that we're activists and we would have to tell, as activists, we'd have to tell our public who was looking to come to this event that we had to disappoint them. So word would get out and there would be some sort of blowback, which we expected. We didn't expect the size of the blowback. We didn't expect major LGBT organizations, national organizations like the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, who fights legal cases that protect our United States constitutional rights. We didn't expect them to go to bat for drag nuns, like silly, flamboyant little queer people.
Preposterous.
Preposterous people, and preposterous on purpose, thank you.
Those are your words, I should say,
Yes, in fact, if I
yes.
were another type of mammal, I could be a purposeful, preposterous porpoise, but
Okay.
that would be.
So, yeah, this has been reported as, the nuns won, the Dodgers gave in. But, I mean, the Dodgers inviting you in the first place and then, I guess, getting hit with this controversy, they aren't the only kind of big brand, if I could put it that way, that will be struggling with this desire to be inclusive and to demonstrate it, but
Correct.
also wary of, a hyped up kind of social media amped backlash from
Correct.
people who are, whether it's specific, I mean, all manner of anything gets labeled woke, you probably fall under that banner. We've seen it, this commercial targeting, you know, Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch, you know, all of that. So do you have any sympathy for the position they find themselves in?
Oh, I have great sympathy. They're trying to run a business. And it's, you know, the social politics of our day are really like tripwires, tripping up people who are really just trying to provide a good product and you know, pay their investors and pay their employees and go home and eat dinner. And this is not helpful, this controversy. But unfortunately, that is the United States of America and many other parts of the world, where there are people who are who they are as they are. And they just want to be able to buy cake and clothes and go to baseball games like everyone else and get married like everyone else to the people they love. And there are people who believe that they know better who do not want them to do those things.
But that's always been there. But this thing of what's now, I think, called Bud Lighting, so after the yes. Budweiser Brewery put out some branding that was supportive of trans visibility. We've also seen the Target department stores with a range of pride-based clothing. They've been targeted, boycotts and all of that. I mean, when you say preposterous, some of the most preposterous things I've ever seen are these YouTube videos posted by people driving pickup trucks over crates of Bud Light beer and machine gunning them, even to make the point about their war on woke.
And they call us flamboyant.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, poor Budweiser and poor Target. And I do, you know, my personal critique is that the Dodgers responded very, very well. They reached out, there was communication, there was a big meeting with a lot of big players, both California state politicians, LGBT community representatives, and the Dodgers upper management, and little old us. They did it right. And they were sincere in their apology. And we accepted, we were still pissed off, but we accepted because, as Sister Berance said, she looked in Stan Kasten's eyes and saw sincerity. And Stan asked us and other LGBT organizations to have an ongoing relationship of consultation and advice with the Dodgers to help them weave our community's culture into their culture as well. And that's the right way to do it. Bud and Target kind of ran. I'm so surprised. I was on KQED, a radio station in San Francisco yesterday, and one of their speakers said exactly what was on everyone's mind. Target has a really robust security staff. Why don't you just have your security staff be right there at the door or where the merchandise is to make sure that no one's doing horrible things to it? It's your merchandise. You have the right to sell it. Why don't you do that? Poor Budweiser, they didn't go out trying to market to the transgender community in a big media push. They sent one can with this wonderful woman's face on it, and she made a video. And then the extremists jumped up and down on Budweiser because of her video. And that was very unfair. But I do think that Budweiser could have done a bit of a better job balancing the two communities.
Yeah, you might be interested in an article in our biggest newspaper chain here just this very morning. Bud Lighting, the cancellation campaign coming to a company near you. This is here in New Zealand, saying there's Disney Pride range on sale at a kind of Target equivalent type of store here, The Warehouse, saying mm-hmm. this is now attracting attention, social media, disrespect, and you know, the possibilities of boycotts flying around social media platforms and Telegram and so on, people claiming that the company is supportive of sexualization of children, pedophilia even.
Can I just pick up on that? That is the worst of all of this, is this glib flinging about of the word groomer and the idea of pedophilia. I am a survivor of childhood sexual assault. I am also a drag nun that serves my LGBT community as an LGBT nun. And I am incensed and offended as a survivor to hear people who are not survivors throwing around one of the most difficult, complex horrors that can happen to a living human being as a political weapon just to get points, just to have their say-so. Leave the whole question of childhood sexual assault out of questions of transgenderism and drag and whether or not your company should be selling rainbow merchandise. It is insidious to survivors, to people who are living to this day with that horror.
Well, there was an online video you made, Sister Unity, in response to that LA Dodgers original decision. I think it's before they reversed it and brought you back into the Pride night so you could get that Community Hero Award. You made an interesting point. I hadn't quite thought about it this way before. You said if you go back to, say, 1960s, you had hippies and Black American culture attracting a big backlash then when it suddenly became, you know, visible and was energetically spread and portrayed throughout, you know, the media channels of the day and so on. And you were making the point, look, those people had always been there, people who held those views and acted counterculturally or whatever. And of course, you know, it wasn't just until the so-called civil rights movement burst out that there were people, you know, who wanted to say and do things. And Black American culture was going on, music and arts and so on, just not being supported and amplified in media. It's the prominence of it, that seems to then, once it comes out, that's what sparks the backlash and puts people in positions where they're either trying to defend it or attack it.
The unknown, the strange, the weird, the queer, in both senses of the word, are always unsettling for some of our population. Some folk need, I mean, I've felt this myself many times. You should see me when I'm not wearing orange glitter. I like my routine. And when my routine gets interrupted, as it has recently, don't know if you've noticed, it's a little off-putting, it's a little upsetting, and you have to adjust. And some people adjust easily, and some people do not adjust well. They insist on things the way they have been, which is known to them. Their ontology is safe and comfortable, and when it gets shaken, they get shaken. And you know, in some senses, in this way, it's a psychological or even a spiritual question. But I do think that the way, you know, you can't have like, okay, a new cultural phenomenon appears, deploy the therapist so that everyone, you know, is comfortable with it. So, but I do think that I notice that human society tends to chew on these things, and it's two steps forward, one step back, one step forward, two steps, and it works itself out over time. And my reference to the hippies and that cultural revolution of the 60s and 70s was that by the mid-70s, people got so, on both sides, got so tired of arguing about things that everyone settled into this understanding of live and let live. And we went forward from there through the 70s, 80s, 90s. Now, it has to be said, not everything was resolved. The Black American community will tell you that not everything was resolved. But in some sense, the upheaval had settled into this philosophy of live and let live. And that's the great thing about my particular country, America, is that we are a mosaic of really different cultures and ideas. But when it works, we live side by side and we settle our disagreements with votes when it's fair and square. And it seems to like stumble along, but it stumbles forward. So I hope that we, this moment, which is far larger than any of us imagined it would be, I hope that this becomes another part of our culture, cultural discourse, chewing on the idea that there is transgenderism and there is queerness. As we like to say, we're here, we're queer, get used to it. This is the getting used to it part. And you don't have to like it to get used to it, but you do have to know that it's in your neighborhood. It is a thing that happens and it is not going away. It serves itself as a community.
Okay, well, you'll certainly be seen on the 16th when they have the Pride Night and you get your Community Hero Award. I should just say, you've never been to New Zealand, I believe, but you do have a personal family connection here with Aotearoa, don't you?
I do. My half-sister and half-brother-in-law and their three children, they live, they moved to Wellington from, I believe, Milwaukee, I want to say 15 to 20 years ago, I was bereft to see them move so far away, but everything that has come from them, from New Zealand, has been stunningly gorgeous. What a blessedly gorgeous country you are living in. And thank you so much for moments when New Zealand steps to the cultural forefront of the human species and shines its pride, its happiness, the way that its culture gives voice to all of its parts. It's really a wonderful model for us in America here who have a fractious society to see how well New Zealanders work with each other.
Well, that's quite an endorsement. It doesn't sound to me too long before you'd be going into politics yourself, seeing as you mentioned Harvey Book there back in the day. But thanks so much for joining us on the phone there from LA. That's Sister Unity from the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, who will be picking up that award, after all, on the 16th of June.